for proper propaganda. The latest in hip-hop dissent, right here on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to Into the Dark here on Radio Free Brooklyn. You know, if you like the shows that we do on this station, you should consider contributing money to the Patreon campaign that keeps the station going, that keeps the one light bulb above my microphone glowing. I did not mean for that to rhyme, but I did see it coming and I did nothing to stop us, so it is entirely my fault. Go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. I'll see you on the other end of the theme music. Stay tuned for more Into Strange the Dark. Little Girl.
Skeptic among believers, and the believer among skeptics.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Who are the witches?
Magic, necromancy, and witchcraft.
Wake up! They're all about you! All around you!
They're not always here.
The often erotic world of the witch.
You can work with coming back to life.
The journalist with an inside knowledge of witchcraft.
It's a sex thing deep down, of course.
Hey everybody, welcome to Into the Dark, the show that takes you to every witchy where and when you've ever wondered about. We have a really good show for you today on the first day of October, or the first day of the month of Halloween. Two interviews happening today. First, with Ivo Dominguez Jr., who is an occult scholar, practitioner, and I'm going to say activist. I'm going to put that out there. I don't know if he would use that term himself, but we're going to find out as soon as I call him on the phone. And then after that, we're going to be talking to Dominique Echevrian, who is a shaman, an intuitive healer, and an all-around fascinating witchy person. So we're going to start with that first interview with me trying again to use the studio phone. And we're going to see just how capable I am of that. Ivo, are you there? Okay, apparently not. Wait, let's hit the button. Hey, Ivo, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Fantastic, it worked.
Yay.
Then let us.
Great when technology works.
I'm always shocked because I sort of assume that robots are our eventual destroyers and all.
It's a possibility.
And I recently found out that apparently an ex-Google engineer has designed an AI that he is hoping to sort of create, or he's developing a project now to create an AI god, which is very, kind of chaos magic-y, which is kind of nice, but at the same time, deeply troubling. But to do a brief introduction, so Ivo Dominguez Jr. is a occultist, studier of esoteric practices, a founding member of the First Coven of the Assembly of the Sacred Wheel, and also an author of many books, and a participant in the creation of the New Alexandrian Library. So, Ivo, welcome to Into the Dark.
And I'm glad to be here.
So, my first question for you has to do with the New Alexandrian Library, because I'm led to understand that it is a... Could you give me like a rundown, just, or give the listeners a rundown of what exactly that project is?
Sure. It is a physical structure, unlike many folks have said we should go digital. It is about 4,200 square feet. It's a concrete dome in Delaware. It has a collection of books, ephemera, artwork, ritual objects, We are still in the cataloging process, so it's only open by appointment at the moment, but its purpose and intention was to create a place where anything that is occult or the metaphysical part of more mainstream traditions can be archived, stored, etc. And in particular, with how do I put this? Our stuff is not important in the eyes of most mainstream libraries, even ones that have special collections for occult materials. It tends to be primarily ephemera or photographs or unpublished manuscripts, and they tend to be held aside so that the only people that have access to them are those that are considered academics in the traditional sense of the word and have gone through many hoops and leaps of faith and money and time to get access to materials that should be readily available. So we are aiming at becoming the equivalent, at least in quality, of a university-level library, but focused just on these materials and open to anyone who is a student of occultism, metaphysics, regardless of whether or not they have a master's or a PhD or are in a program to get that.
Where
also, there's a lot of stuff that simply is tossed out. I mean, I know I have, and you probably have enjoyed the various tales where you buy the books that are being cast off by libraries.
All the time.
And mostly because they're materials that have dropped in circulation and there's a limited amount of space on the shelves. And most libraries do not flag occult materials as permanent collection material. It exists as long as there's an interest, and then it's removed and pitched. So we're also, in addition to the stuff that is rare, are trying to keep one of everything for permanent reference, regardless, because we won't know 50 years from now, 100 years from now, what materials from this era that were the so-called, you know, popular occult writings of the time are going to be interesting or necessary for somebody else's studies. So we're keeping everything. And as a result, the plan is that the library will be expanded upon again and again over the course of the next several decades. We are currently up to the I's. We're cataloging by alphabetical order by author and are in the process of creating our own system for categorizing the materials, because if you use Library of Congress or a Dewey Decimal or any of a number of systems, almost all the occult materials fall into a woefully small span of digits and numbers.
So you mentioned the sort of things that university libraries tend to focus on, and that those sort of limitations and your attempts to broaden that focus. What kinds of materials might someone find were they to go?
Well, as a for example, we have several copies of people's personal journals, people's books of lights and shadows, their notebooks of records of their ritual work or their meditations. We have private correspondences between different occultists and writers. We have artwork. I think, you know, one of the other things that we value is the cultural aspect. So, for example, one of our prize things, we have four paintings of the four archangels that were actually painted by Dion Fortune, Violet Firth, of a great fame for her various efforts in both writing and magic making. And they used to hang in her temple.
That's really cool. Beyond that, what are some, like, of your personal sort of favorites or the things that you're sort of, like, very excited to have in this library and make available to other people?
Well, I don't know if you know of Victor and Cora Anderson's work.
I don't, but could you maybe give a short intro for the folks
at
home?
They were the founders of the tradition of fairy witchcraft, spelled F-E-R-I. Was primarily a West Coast phenomena, though it has expanded across this country and into several others, and they were doing their own thing long before the expansion of various flavors of Wicca or traditional witchcraft, or frankly, earlier than some folks that were doing Golden Dawn or OTO work. So they basically bootstrapped and out of their raw creative juices and scholarship created a vibrant tradition. And now they both passed away a number of years ago, and we were contacted by the current custodian of their works, and we will be, you know, the official site for Victor and Cora's archives.
Congratulations. And,
that's pretty meaningful to us. When Judy Harrow died, who has accomplishments in two worlds, really. One as a witch, and another as a social worker, and pretty impressive work in both fields, if you will. And when she passed away, she left us her personal library and unpublished materials, things that she was working on. And perhaps not as sexy or exciting as some other people, but there are three-ring binder upon three-ring binder of the notes that she would write to herself for the workshops and classes that she was giving. And the doodles you can follow her thought process as she created her course of study for her students, both in social work and in witchcraft. And that kind of material is, I think, really important because it shows a history of ideas or a development over time of a person's thought process about how they would approach their work. And that's not something that you're simply going to, you know, perhaps someday a biographer will do justice to her life story, and they're going to need those materials if they're actually going to do a good biography.
Yeah. Well, that's really fantastic. So it's a physical library in Delaware, in the town of Georgetown, I believe, right?
Well, near Georgetown.
Okay.
And this is part of the other thing. We wanted to make this as sustainable as possible so that the process for the creation of the library has been very slow and drawn out. The land that the library is sitting upon, which is a little bit over, the whole property is 102 acres. The library's share of it is about a little over 30 acres.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah, and well, here's the good part. The land that the library is sitting on is paid for. There's no mortgage on it. There's no lien. It's debt-free. And the building itself took time to do because we paid the contractor on a as-we-raised-money-more-work-got-done basis. So the building itself is paid for free and clear.
That's great. If people want to access this, they need to make an appointment. Or I'm interested if there's either work underway to include a sort of digital form of access.
Yes. So, as I said, we're in the process of cataloging, and we also had a friend of our the organization's who is a computer geek donate about 800 hours of his time to create a proprietary database for us, because, you know, frankly, the stuff that large libraries use is frightfully expensive, and you never actually own it. You are simply leasing it. But the stuff, what he created for us, is actually going to, when it's done cataloging, you'll be able to search our card catalog directly from anywhere on the Internet. Moreover, we are creating a app that you can download into your phone or tablet so that in addition to searching from there, when you are walking around inside the physical library, you'll be able to do searches from your phone or a tablet, and it will tell you, you know, which shelf any given thing is on.
That's fantastic.
Long term, we're also planning on digitizing and OCRing as many of the documents as possible within the limitations of things copyright.
That sounds actually also really great, just because, I mean, the thing about this eye toward preservation is something I think is incredibly valuable right now, and there is sort of a lot to be said for physical preservation, but of course, you know, digital preservation does allow things to survive, things like natural disasters and the like.
Up to a point, and I'll say that one of the things that we've noted, and we'll have to keep in mind as well as any other program or people wanting to store things, is that we have quite a number of things that have been given to us already in digital format, and then have had to find. I currently have four old computers of my own. I mean, there's plenty of computers at the library that I've set up with multiple operating systems of different ages with antique software on them, so that we can open old files and bring them up to the modern era so they can actually be digitized in a way that's useful to the here and now. And people are giving us, old diskettes. People are giving us old jazz drives, if you remember what those were. So one of the problems with digital technology is that there's the perception that it is more durable or more flexible than the physical object. And in some cases that's true, but it's remarkable how quickly, unless things are kept up to date and moved, I think I recently read something on the order of 60-70% of the actual data files for the research in biology in this country is now no longer readable.
Wow, that's interesting. So I was going to ask, actually, because you, I think, have been called one of these sort of important people in the early boom of paganism online in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
It was curious that you would be so interested in physical preservation, but now this all makes so much sense.
I think digital preservation is the best way. As for example, we've been digitizing old cassette tapes of songs, chants, music. I've digitized a couple of things that were magical or pagan music, if you will, or ritual music that were never on anything beyond the era of vinyl. And that's all well and good. And people forget also that, CDs, DVDs, Blu-rays are not, even the archival quality ones, only have about a 50-year shelf life before they begin to degrade to nothing.
That is making me think a lot more about my mortality in a way that I imagine you did not intend, but there it is. So
I guess what I'm saying is that there's a need for both kinds of preservation and then due diligence to make sure that you look at what you've already digitized and make sure that it is now available to whatever the current considered to be, whatever the PDF of the era is, whatever the MP3 of the era is, because that changes over time. And the physical material that you store the digital information on also is remarkably fragile, if you look at it in the long term, whereas a book will, if properly cared for, a book on a shelf in a library has a greater chance of surviving the long run than its digital equivalent.
And that is very, honestly, affirming news for someone like me who goes to libraries and buys old books and
yeah,
surrounds themselves with those for extensive periods of time. I'm curious, so you are a founding member of the Assembly of the Sacred Wheel.
Yeah.
And I'm led to understand that this has since grown into, I think, a dozen covens or a 13th one maybe forming?
13 with a 14th in the process of being created.
Right. And those are all in Delaware, Pennsylvania, I think in Maryland as well. Are they?
We have one in New Jersey. That's our farthest north point.
Okay. And I'm curious, like what, because I mean, a lot of people have been practicing Wicca, paganism, old European religious folk religions in sort of small groups, in sort of an organized but like in many ways unofficially recognized kind of way. It's kind of a private affair. What prompted you to seek
recognition from the federal government, and to really sort of start to organize this out in the open in this big networking way?
Well, honestly, it was born out of coming into paganism in the late 70s, early 80s, where there was so much, let's call it conflict and growing pains, and quite a bit of sturm and drawing and nonsense about who and what we were supposed to be as practitioners and also as communities. And in some regards, being located in Delaware was actually ideal because we were close enough. At the time, my partner and I owned a alternative bookstore in Wilmington, Delaware. So we knew a lot of people that had an interest in a variety of things, including occult stuff. So we had no problem driving, 2-3 hours to the Philadelphia area or the D.C. area, or the Baltimore area, to go to events or rituals or workshops that were being taught by various groups. But it was far, so it was close enough to be in touch with the community, but far enough away that it wasn't geographically convenient to necessarily join or train with someone else.
Yeah.
And from our distance and our vantage point, we were able to see that there were things that could be done if you organized like anarchist cells, which was kind of like the format most occult groups of the area had, or you could try to do a overarching, sweeping networking organization kind of thing that was basically a group of groups. And we wanted to come up with something in between because what we were trying to accomplish was long-term projects. I mean, very early on, we had the idea of something like the library. There were other projects that we had in mind, and the only way that you can create infrastructure or be tangible and present in the world is if you have some of the trappings of the world. So we decided we'll go the route of getting a 501c3 status and be recognized as a religious organization. And I'll tell you, that was also an eye-opener. In the early days of our organization, we held a conference at a hotel. And you know what? Unless you could show that you were an organization, it was kind of hard to get a hotel to pay attention to you, to rent the space and create a conference, etc.
Huh. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, that... So
if you want to do certain things, if you're doing it simply in your living room or in your backyard, that's fine. But if you actually want to create events or projects that are larger, it's almost impossible to do so without taking on some of the trappings of the world. Though we did create a dual structure within the organization in that we have both a board of trustees and a coven leadership group / council of elders, and one is on the financial worldly side and the other is on the ecclesiastical or magical side. So it's a dual system within the organization for that.
I have to say, I do rather like the way in which the assembly maintains a foot in both sort of realms. Because I mean, it does allow them, it seems, to use their collective power and organization for the betterment of society, not just in magical ways. But, I mean, I saw recently a press release or an official statement that the assembly made about police brutality.
Yeah.
And it was a wonderful statement to be made, especially just because the specificity of it showed a great deal of care and knowledge and interest in the problems of the more secular world. I mean, like the release mentioned the 1033 program, which I never hear anybody talk about.
Well, one of the things that happens, if you actually build a community in addition to building a magical training system, then it becomes a culture as opposed to just being... And I don't want to say that it's bad to have something that's just an occult school or just a training system or a mystery school for seekers that are looking for personal transformation, because all that stuff is really good. But one of the things that was missing from our perspective And by the way, the original founding charter for the assembly was written in a god-awful Friday night through Sunday process by consensus wordsmithing event, which thankfully doesn't have to happen again. But we're creating a community because it's a question of taking the... Do you know what I mean by a difference between esoteric religion and exoteric religion?
I do, but it might be good to just...
Quick and dirty.
Yeah.
Esoteric religion is honestly the stuff that mostly people associate with magic, occultism, witchcraft, whatever, ceremonial magic, in that it, the focus is on working with the powers or working with personal transformation or elevating one's consciousness, et cetera, et cetera. And in most churches or synagogues, or that's reserved for the holy people. But in paganism, it's for everyone. However, there's the exoteric stuff, which is the work that is founded on your principles that you do in the outside world. So most people's experience of church is also exoteric. You have the sermons and the teachings as a civilizing force. You have care for the elderly or the poor or whatever. You have external expression in the mundane world of your principles in action. And if you're doing it right, and it looks more like, you know, liberation theology and that kind of stuff, from my perspective. But we also wanted to have we kind of viewed it as a tripod. You have the exoteric stuff, you have the esoteric stuff, and then you have the just plain old secular stuff. And if you have all three of those, then you have what's required to become a self-replicating, self-maintaining cultural movement, as opposed to any one of those things that has a potential by itself to fade out.
Right. I mean, anything that's based on individuals could fade with those individuals, but things that have structural basis can find new people to work into those families. We're kind of running low on time at the moment, I didn't want to get through this interview without asking you about two of your books. I mean, you're an author of many books, and also, listeners, hey, worth checking out. There's also a website that Evo does of maintaining chants. So that's super cool. And I honestly, I'd say we should have you back on to talk about that someday. But the show's actually ending. This is the last season. So shadows are growing. But before night falls on Into the Dark, which I realize is a bad mixed metaphor given that it's about the dark, and so night doesn't really moving on. So books, yes. You have two books in particular that I wanted to talk about in the short amount of time we have left, and one of them is the most recent book, which is The Keys to Perception, Practical Guide to Psychic that's not the most recent one. The most recent one is astrology.
No, The Keys is the most recent.
Oh, that is the most recent.
Keys Perception just came out in September. The astrology book was the one that came out last year, yeah.
Okay, well, I want to talk about both of those. Since I mentioned Keys of Perception first, so that is a book looking into the ability to develop one's psychic abilities for certain purposes. But could you give a sort of brief description of what kinds of psychic abilities you're talking about in that? Because it's not, say, like telekinesis or something like that.
No, not that that can't occur, but the book was written so that people that are practitioners of any kind or people of any faith, I mean, it clearly has a pagan slant, but it's written for anyone who is looking to hone, tune into, allow for their intuition, their psychic abilities, whether that be a glimpse of vision or a hint of an odor that gives you a message or a whisper in your ear, that most people have to some degree, but for a variety of reasons tend not to be developed. And the book actually builds from starting with very simple exercises, and some of them will astound you because they're really about learning to see the world. A lot of psychic perception starts with a more full and sensual appreciation of the physical senses that you already have, because to the degree that you pay attention to color, to form, to texture, to sound, and see more clearly, perceive more fully, then that also is brought to bear with the psychic senses, which are simply taking subtle impressions and running them through the filters that you normally use for your physical senses. But there's also a lot of material in the book that's also about managing it so that it doesn't become a burden or an obstacle, because one of the reasons why people tend to either drop some of their sensitivity when they're children or become afraid of it when it resurfaces at some point as adults is that it's not managed well. And psychic senses don't just provide information. There also is often a strong emotional overlay or a gut feeling overlay. And as a result, people clamp down. It seems that you can't, click on a link without being taken to some article about the woes of being an introvert or the woes of being an empath.
Right.
And in truth, that's about management. Everything is a gift if you embrace it and manage it. And then there's also ways in the book to make it group work, because a lot of times people think of psychism as a solo practice. But from my perspective, when people work together, they can collect better information and better guidance.
That is fantastic. And so we are right at the very edge of where we
yep.
need to cut this off. But I don't want to leave it without bringing up practical astrology for witches and pagans. I thought this book has a really interesting angle on astrology. So if you could give like a 45-second description for people to check it out later, just because we don't have time to talk about it on this show
yeah.
just now.
It's astrology for people that don't mean to be astrologers, but want to claim astrology's power to describe energy, essence, and form. It is the West's hidden, subtle language. We don't have Sanskrit or the Hebrew letters as our language, but astrology provides you a way, even if you're not using it for prediction or personal development, to describe and understand the energy that's inherent in plants, animals, crystals, materia used in magic, etc., and how to apply it for both rituals, workings, as well as your daily life.
That is fantastic. Thank you so much for being on. This has been great. If people want to learn more about the New Alexandrian Library or about the Assembly or about the work you're doing, where are good places for them to go?
NewAlexandrianLibrary.com. The Assembly site is simply sacredwheel.org. And mine is EvoDominguezJr.com. And I'm also easy to find on Facebook.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on. This has been a pleasure.
It was fun.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
So, thank you so much to Evo for being on. We're going to move on to our second interview of the day, who has been waiting very patiently outside. So I'm going to play this kind of scary piano music and run out the door. I'll be right back. do. Wait, let me grab that for you. In the meantime, by Scary Piano Music. Hi. So I've got Dominique Echeverrian. I feel like I've been saying your name wrong this whole time. How do you properly say it while I get that iPhone charger?
Okay, so Echeverria, but white people say Echeverria. Echeverria. Is that okay?
I tried.
That's okay. I know it's a difficult last name. It's better to try than just be like, can I just say Dominique E? Do you have something shorter I can call you? At least you try, you know?
I mean, I think names are super important in magic and in the world. Because, I mean, you know, there's so much about... Honestly, I was talking to somebody about Rumpelstiltskin yesterday because I was helping some anarchist witches on a farm, which is why if I seem weird or tired, it's because I was smashing a rock with a sledgehammer for 3 hours while trying to sing the Soviet national anthem and not remembering the words because I don't speak Russian. And up there, like somebody would try to introduce me to someone and they couldn't remember my name. And I realized this is perfect. Now I can do the Rumpelstiltskin thing. Mm-hmm. And like, if they can't guess my name, I guess claim their firstborn or something like that. But like, that's not... That's silly. Anyway, so Dominique is created a website called Universal Mother.
Yes.
Which in 2015. Mm-hmm. And could you give people a rundown of what kind of stuff is there?
Sure. Okay, so it is a healing resource site for anyone who is suffering from addiction, some suffering from mental health issues, suffering from a broken heart, suffering from being just a different kind of person in your community and being ostracized, suffering from, you know, not knowing how to really help in this world. It's basically any question you would have for a mother that maybe your mom doesn't have an answer to, you can find it there. Because before, back in the day, when we were able to exist within tribes, all of the weight was not put on, you know, a single parent or, you know, two parents. It was the work and weight of the family was kind of like evenly distributed. And so I feel like there's not even space during, you know, right now for mothers to be able to have all the answers and to, you know, fill all these roles. And so it's important that there are other resources out there that you can turn to that are safe. In case you have any questions for your mother.
That is wonderful. And I understand that, so you are a shaman, an intuitive healer.
I call myself a healer. I'm technically a shaman, but I'm an intuitive Reiki healer. So I use a combination of different techniques because I'm a mutt. So I pull from different healing techniques from my different backgrounds as well as Reiki healing.
Okay, and how did you start with intuitive healing? Like, where did that grow out of?
I always say that my first memory of being a healer was hugging my mother when she was crying when I was a little girl. That's my earliest memory, is me hugging my mother when she was crying. And I think that I was definitely born into my family to be a healer for us and for my, you know, my community that I live in, that I exist in. And I started doing it more seriously after I survived my suicide attempt as a means to heal myself, because my body was mutilated so extremely. My mind was in such chaos. My heart was so broken. I was so destroyed that there wasn't one person that could help me. And so I thought if I could just... you know, going out through seeking people to help heal me, I was like, I'm just too much for one person. I need to become my own healer. And through doing that, you know, as soon as I started going that route, my healing started, my own healing was just exponentially increasing. And I think there's a lot of power in being your own healer, and that's the kind of healer I am. I believe that everyone knows what they need that's best for their body. I believe everyone knows what's best for them. And so I just kind of act as a vessel and help people tap into their own healing abilities and just kind of remind them of their power and of all the wisdom that's already inside of them.
That's fantastic. So when you decided to become your own healer, what did that process look like? Was it just sort of like a change of mindset? Was it sort of a research-oriented thing?
I was in the hospital, and even though I was... So after I was taken off the breathing tube and all of the IVs and everything, I was locked in a psych ward, and my body started to rot away, and they were going to have to amputate me again, and they we got a lawyer to try to get me out of the psych ward. My family was begging. My friends were begging. Huffington Post, Paper, Vice, the New York Post, all these people were posting about me, and they still wouldn't let me out of the psych ward. And so I kind of just when I was in isolation, I just kind of like tapped into whatever power I had inside of me. And I was like, if I make it out of here, I'm going to become a shaman, and I'm going to make sure that this never happens to anyone again. And so after that day, it was like clockwork. My godmother flew in from Puerto Rico, and I was able to get in a wheelchair the next day. They finally let me out of the room, and my healing was just like bam, bam, bam. And the more I learned, the more I wanted to share with my friends, like, how did your hair start growing back? Because all my hair fell out and I had bald spots, and that's why I had to cut it so short. I had cut 13 inches off my hair because my hair was falling out, you know? And so I found, and once I got that under control, then I started sharing that. How do you regulate your hormones? Well, I have a lot of trans friends that need to regulate their hormones. My mom is going through menopause, and all of her friends need this knowledge on how to regulate their hormones. There is an entire hormonal shift that occurs in young women during their Saturn return that people don't really talk about, and we need to educate them on how to regulate their hormones during that time. And so through learning how to regulate my hormonal levels to help with my mood stabilization, and also from detoxing, I shared that. And then I was just like, I have so much fucking information. I'm so sick of like being on my phone all day long, giving everyone advice all the time. I'll just put everything that's in my brain on a site and then just tell them to go there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And it's not just you on the site, right? Like, there's also other healers and shamans there.
Again, like, I don't think that there's one person to save the world. I think that it needs to be a collective effort. And so, and I also think that this like healing and wellness trend that's happening is dominated by cis white males that are gurus, and they prey on weak women and weak men, and they take advantage of them. And when people are vulnerable and in need of healing, they shouldn't be worrying about whether or not like a shaman's going to molest them while they're on ayahuasca. Like, right. That is not okay. Like, not on my watch. So my site has a list of healers that have worked on me that I trust with my life and my soul. And they're safe for anyone, whether you're a child, a disabled woman who is unable to fend for themselves, and or a stubborn cis male that has never been introduced to healing, and they need to like gently be pushed into it.
That's fantastic. And I'm curious, so you mentioned you were a child when you first started sort of noticing intuitive healing or engaging in it. Was your household sort of an openly magical household? Was there a sense that this stuff was happening and it was...
I was always very quiet about like I was raised by my mother. She's a single mom, and she was always very encouraging of me being imaginative, and that's kind of what everybody wrote it off as, that I'm very imaginative, that I'm very creative, that I'm very, you know, that I have all these ideas. You know, it's just kind of seen as like, oh, she's an artist. And so I really just like ran with that, and that's how I so I was encouraged to be an artist, and I secretly always incorporated my spirituality into my artwork, but I wasn't really like, I didn't really talk about it, not because of any reason, just because I don't know. But my mom, I didn't really know how to articulate. I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't I didn't know what Reiki was when I was 8 years old. Right, like, neither did they. Like, So, but now my family definitely encourages it now that they know what it everything is and what I'm doing. And, but I mean, my mother's father was born on a Choctaw reservation, and he and my father's father, he's Guatemalan Mexican Mayan. And, you know, my grandmother, she comes from a family of curanderas in Puerto Rico. And so my grandparents and my parents, it kind of skipped their generation a little bit. Okay. And my generation is kind of learning the old ways, so to speak. So it's not really like I had to introduce my family into anything I was doing. It was more of like me having me remembering and helping them to remember.
Okay. And I was reading an essay you wrote about around the time you were 18, you stepped away from, you were going through sort of a, you had a number of, I think, ulcers it was.
Mm-hmm.
And you were given a sort of a vast amount of prescription medications.
Yeah.
And you decided to move away from those.
Yeah. So that was kind of my first introduction to holistic medicine. By the time I was a senior in high school, I was throwing up blood all every day. And my mom was having to drive me to UCSF to see specialists. I had an endoscopy and colonoscopy, and they found out that I had 36 bleeding ulcers in my esophagus, duodenum, however the hell you say that, stomach, small intestines, and esophagus. And I had all these other digestive problems, and they suggested medication. They're like, take all these meds, right? And, you know, if you just think about the chemistry of your body and physics and what that, you know, all those chemicals do to you, I was just like repolluting my body and making everything worse, but like treating the symptoms once in a while. Yeah. And that's really like what pharmaceutical companies do and what doctors do. They treat the symptoms, but they don't treat the problem. And so sometimes I would be in such excruciating pain that my mom would have to drive me to the hospital in the middle of the night for a morphine drip while I was in high school, because my pain stomach was so, so, so bad. And so I met this amazing drag queen, Glamamore, David Glamamore, the grandmother of House of More in San Francisco. And, you know, she hadn't seen me at the clubs in a while because I was sneaking in as a teenager into drag clubs.
Cool.
And I was like, that's because I've been like dying. And she's like, what happened? And I told her, and she's like, throw away all your medications, start drinking teas. You need to heal your stomach through diet and holistic medicine. And she's like, all that shit's making it worse. But it's like, I have my mom telling me to take the medication. I have all these professionals telling me to take the medication because right. That's what they thought.
Accepted authority.
Yeah, that's what society, they thought right. Yeah. Was, you know, the best thing for me, because that's what society tells us. But so I had to learn the hard way that that is not how you handle horrible digestive issues. You don't put more chemicals in your body like that. And so, yeah, that was kind of my... That was like the first time in my life where I was like, I'm not listening to doctors anymore, you know?
Yeah. And, okay. So, childhood, et cetera, and so on. Sorry, I'm like looking at my notes now, which are, okay. My notes got kind of like, it's when I was walking to the studio, I dropped all my papers
That's
on the
okay.
ground and like a huge.
Before I came here, I do healing sessions with people, I usually messages start coming to me about that person. Sometimes they come to me in different forms. For me personally, I feel a lot of things in my body. So right before I work with someone, sometimes I'll start feeling all of their pains. Like I'll start having back problems and knee problems. I'll start feeling sick. I'll have a headache. And the person will show up at my house and I'll start working on them and I'll feel that that's what's going on in their body. And then afterwards they'll tell me, because I prefer them not to tell me because I like to trust my intuition.
Okay,
they'll tell me afterwards like, oh, I had the worst headache before I lay down. My back problem, my knee. And I'm like, is that why my knee has been like in such pain and my back's been twisted all day, is because like my body's telling me that this is what's wrong with you.
Yeah.
So anyway, so before I see people, I always kind of get a pre-reading of them. And before I came here, I pulled two cards from my Ascended Masters deck, which is recommended to me by my Reiki master.
Cool.
And the two, like for everyone that's listening, the first one was priorities. Okay. So I have a little here for you. Devote time to your highest priorities, even if it means getting to bed earlier or later. This is a wonderful time to work on projects that are near and dear to your heart, even if you're confused about how to approach the project or you fear whether you'll be able to accomplish your dreams. Do it anyway. You'll feel elated by the time and energy you invest into your time priorities, your true priorities, because your inner self will feel, will feel loved and well cared for. As you invest in your priorities, you're investing in yourself. Let go of procrastination or perfectionism. Break your major goals into baby steps and take one step at a time. Revamp your schedule so that you can devote regular time to your priorities. Be assertive in saying no to anything that diverts you from your path. And also, I'm adding this, say no to anything that drains your energy or you don't feel fulfilled from. Mm. And the other one I pulled for you guys is, is purification. And that's basically like, reevaluate what you're working on and what are your intentions in what you're working on. Not just like purify, like sure, detox, you're not supposed to eat sugar, you're not supposed to drink, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But it's more of some, like reevaluate the situation. What am I getting out of this, but how can I be of service? Like, I feel like right now people need to think to themselves, like, how can I be of service today to myself, to my family, to my inner circle, and to the world?
Yeah.
Even if it's something very, very small. I mean, the world is crumbling before our eyes, but how can you step forth and help when you are crippled by your own suffering, you know? And so that's why there's no better time than now for people to work on their trauma, to release their trauma, to center themselves, to ground themselves so that the next step they take can be for the greater good. Because you need to like let go of your suffering and let go of your shit, because the time is now to join in and everyone that's trying to lift the consciousness of the planet and help everyone. It's like no time for petty shit. Like if I can get over what happened to me, you can fucking get over what happened to you.
Word. Bam.
You know?
Yeah. That is, hey everybody, the time has come. Let go of your shit. We need to move forward. Great.
Stop being pussies. Actually, pussies are really powerful. Stop being fearful. There you go.
Being fearful. I mean, accept fear is like the necessary precondition for bravery or something like that. Like you have to be scared to be brave.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, happy Halloween month, everybody, I guess. Sorry, I've been feeling really great that it's Halloween. Anyway, that's a sidetrack. The thing that I was going to ask you about as I was frantically scanning my notes, which I can't even read because my handwriting is terrible. I understand that you are dividing your time right now between LA
and
New York City, because you're doing more formal training in healing.
In
LA. Tell me about that.
Well, I am a psychotic Virgo overachiever, and I don't just want to like know how to work with someone in one way. You know, I want to be prepared for whoever comes my way. And, you know, that requires different vocabulary to communicate with someone. That requires different techniques sometimes. That requires different tools sometimes, you know, because we all come from different backgrounds. So I'm kind of training in everything that I can possibly train in right now as far as healing. I'm training to be a medical intuitive. I'm training to become a Reiki master. I'm already a Reiki practitioner so that I can attune other people. I'm studying holistic medicine. I'm studying the techniques of my indigenous great grandparents. And so I'm reading as many books as I can about the female psyche and, addiction and trauma, ancestral trauma, mental health issues, you know, anything that cancer, whatever the fuck it is, whatever you've got, I want to be able to handle it. So I have to fill my brain with a lot of info. So I'm in LA just being a hermit crab and studying and training. And I've been doing a lot of secret group healings with different people in, you know, the queer community in LA. And that's why I'm here in New York. I am going to be doing them out here too at a Dream House. The old people who used to run the Spectrum, Gage and Danny. And I'm going to be doing one on the 4th. there are two different kinds of tickets. The first set of tickets are for full body Reiki healing, release ritual, and sound bath. And the other ticket is for guided meditation, sound bath, release ritual, and healing. So, yeah.
Where can people get those tickets?
Okay, so you can RSVP at dominique@universalmother.love. You can go on my Instagram. I have info on my Instagram. Just follow my social media because I post whenever I'm doing things. I am not a good business person. I'm horrible at technology. And the way that people find me is like through word of mouth and because it's divine timing. So go on my social media and I posted all of the info on there. Dominique_Echevarria. So yeah, there's that. Because, cool. You know, for me, I had to spend thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to get healed. And for my community that I exist in, my friends can't afford like a couple thousand dollars a month to get Reiki healing. So so the way that I'm able to kind of make it affordable and accessible to more people is to just do big group ones and get everyone at once.
Okay. And actually, since we're talking about important dates, October 11th, Divine Mother is growing, I think you told me.
Universal Mother,
sorry.
It's okay.
It's growing, I believe you said.
I have a healing group healing on the 4th and a group healing on the 11th.
Okay, sorry, yeah. Bad misreading of
yeah
of text. I am brain dead right now.
But it is growing. It's growing because it's growing and I want it to grow even more. So if you are a healer, that means art therapist, that means a holistic doctor, that means a Reiki master, that means a counselor, that means a shaman, that means a witch, that means an astrologer. If you are a healer in New York, I would love to meet you. You can contact me. And if I like your vibe and if I trust you, and I would, you know, trust you enough to, you know, refer you to my friends, then I would love to put you on my site so more people can find you and know that you're trusted. And if you want to be an investor, honey, we need investors. Like, the world is freaking the fuck out, but no one's going to really help unless their suffering is a little bit at ease. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, that's great. And okay, so we're running up on the end of the show. So if people want to find out more about you, more about Universal Mother, they should go to universalmother.com.
Universalmother.love.
.love. I missed that detail. That's an amazing detail. Yeah. I love that.
Well, .com was taken because I was searching to see if it existed and it didn't. But then the next day when I tried to buy the domain, of course, internet, they were like, now you have to buy it. So I was like, I'm not spending money on .com. I'll take .love for a cheaper price.
Okay, cool. Well, I mean, it's a better URL.
And, yeah, it is. It is. So...
Cool. And where else can people go to?
You can find me on Instagram, Dominique_Echevarria. You can follow Universal Mother on Instagram, universalmother.love. You can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Facebook. You can fucking call out to the people. Say that they call out to me before they go to sleep and I visit them in their dreams. So maybe I'll appear in your dreams if you really need me. I don't know. Just fucking find a way to find me and get yourself healed.
That is fantastic. And please, everyone, do find a way to find Dominique because Dominique is fantastic.
Send a pigeon.
Do it. Do all the means of, you know, can you send telegrams anymore? Try that. Go to Western Union. Do they still exist?
Go to Western Union. The only way to get a hold of me is through Western Union.
Exactly. Okay. This has been fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate this. And this has been a wonderful chat. And
if you can help, please donate money, supply.